the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy, and while Mayo aren't playing, we are still podcasting. I don't even think Mayo are training. Mike Finnerty, welcome along.
Yeah, evening, Rob. We're also ticking over, waiting for our fate to be decided. And by our fate, I mean Mayo's fate. Thankfully, we work in an industry where we're waiting for news at this stage. It's midweek. It's our downtime. And yeah, I'm delighted we have somebody with us tonight, Rob, who can explain to us how the qualifier draw works. It's going to be the highlight of my week.
That's his main objective on this podcast, although we have lots more to talk about. A general chat, we're going to be talking about the big news in the Mayo News this week, about the ladies panel and some of the players that are going to be missing from that a little bit later in the podcast. We're also going to be talking about just how Mayo might be shaping up, what to look for there. But to begin with, our key guest, and now a regular this season, Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent. Welcome along.
Thanks, Rob. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good, Colm. Yeah, good.
That's it.
Quiet, too quiet.
Yeah, it is quiet, but that's, I suppose, when you're out of the first section of the championship and on April 24, it does create quite a void through some of the best weekends of the year, I suppose. So that's the issue there. But it'll come quick.
It's very hard to kind of fathom what Mayo go through in championships, Colm. As a serious contender, they don't have a strange kind of history in terms of like their pathways towards getting back involved.
Yeah, no. Well, they do, and I mean, obviously, was there a more pronounced, prolonged journey than 2017, wasn't it 10 games? That's after the defeat to Galway, and obviously all that went with that. There was a Derry game after extra time, and then a replay with Roscommon and all are in quarter final as well. So it's a journey that certainly the county knows, not necessarily the current group of players. I think there's a lot of changes obviously in those 5 years, but certainly for the county and for the supporters, there is a pathway there that demands patience, I suppose. That's the main thing that's required at this stage, that they prepare and approach what's coming next.
The big difficulty for us, though, to start with, Colm, is we're wrestling with this feeling that this one's a bit different, but then we taught that the other times.
It is. I suppose it's different in that the qualifiers, there's two rounds less. And now, we say two rounds less, that's with an asterisk, because obviously there could be a preliminary first round qualifier too. But we'll take it that the games this weekend between Limerick and Tipperary and Kildare Westmeath go to form. And by form, that's league status and those in the higher divisions, which are Limerick and Kildare, which are Sam Maguire teams ostensibly, that they will proceed to provincial finals. And if they do, that's a clean cut then for the qualifiers, in that there will be 8 teams, and 5 of those teams, I think I'm right in saying 5, who were beaten in the quarterfinal or the first round as it was, but quarterfinals by and large, Tyrone, Mayo, Armagh, Clare and Louth will all, if there is a preliminary first round, they'll draw. 2 of those will come out and draw for that. But if Limerick and Kildare win, proceed to their provincial finals, that will leave Tipperary and Westmeath in the Tailteann Cup, and then there's an overload of Tailteann Cup teams, and there'll be 2 preliminary rounds there before they determine what the pathway is for Tailteann Cup teams. So just to reiterate, Limerick and Kildare win, no provincial first round, or no qualifier first round, and all 8 teams who have been beaten before the provincial finals, that would be either Dublin or Meath, I'll say Meath, obviously Monaghan and Derry, the losers there will join the other teams in a draw, which will take place Monday morning to find out who the first round qualifiers are. And obviously the following week after that, the winners of those 4 first round qualifier games will play the 4 provincial final losers. So it's shorter and sharper than it has been, because obviously a number of teams have been diverted to Tailteann Cup. So that does leave you with less of a run in, shall we say. You're unlikely to, whatever team you're drawing in the first round of the qualifier, they're going to be of a decent standard.
the way Cullum explained it there is the most concise and succinct way I've heard in the last few weeks. And I suppose it just brings home, Rob, the fact that there's so much hinging, particularly on that Limerick-Tipperary game, because if Tipperary were to win, then
just
there
to be clear,
that,
Mike, because you don't see Westmeath beating Kildare, but you can see that Limerick-Tipperary game being tight.
Yeah, I can. And I suppose if Tipperary win, then there is a chance that Mayo come out of the draw next Monday morning and they have to play in a preliminary qualifier next Saturday week. And based on what I'm hearing in terms of they have done very little since the Galway game as a group. You know, I think they took the first week off. I think they had a bit of a blowout together the weekend after the Galway game, which won't have done morale any harm. They did a little bit last week. I gather some players haven't done anything yet since the Galway game. Some guys who just maybe need to let the bodies heal. So like Mayo are coming back very slowly. The injuries are still a big worry. There's a major, you know, injury list still there. And again, with the passing of time since the Galway game, we can probably nearly be forgiven for forgetting some of the caliber of players who, as far as I'm aware, still won't be available if Mayo have to play on Saturday week. Whereas if Mayo aren't out until the June bank holiday weekend, you may have a few of those back. And all of a sudden, you know, Mayo are in much better shape. They have an extra fortnight as well. So I'd just be curious, Cullum, what you think about that Limerick-Tipperary game. I know, as you say, if it goes to form, and by form, I mean league form, really. And I know Limerick had that great win over Clare on penalties. But it's by no means a gimme. And I think there'll be a lot of supporters of Mayo, Tyrone, Armagh, Clare, Louth, you know, keeping an eye on that one as well, because it could draw other counties into a preliminary qualifier, as you said, a lot sooner than they might like.
And the thing about that is, Mike, that the draw is much narrower because you only have five teams in that draw that have been beaten. That's just to go back over that again. If Tipperary, and there is a good chance, Mike, obviously they are provincial champions from 2020, started the league poorly, but kicked on a good bit, and were probably a little unlucky in the end of it all to lose to Cavan. And they're missing Michael Quinlivan. But having said that, they're an experienced team. By and large, they're an experienced team, probably more experienced than Limerick. And I'm inclined to agree with you. I think that's the more likely match that's going to force the extra game. And if it forces the extra game, then Mayo are in the draw with Armagh, Tyrone, Clare and Louth. Two of them come out. So a bit of Russian roulette there. If it was Mayo and Tyrone, and you know the way these things are, well, that would be really something.
I think some Mayo fans are so fatalistic, they've already booked their hotels in Healy Park for that weekend, Cullum. That's the way they think. Can I clarify, before we move on to a bit more football talk, can I clarify one thing? If there's no need for this preliminary round, when is the draw then for the first round of the qualifiers?
Monday morning. The draws are Monday morning
no
for both.
What? Ah,
yeah, the draws are Monday morning because all fixtures will have been resolved by then. There'll be a clear pathway to this at, well, Tipperary and Limerick is Saturday night, and Kildare and Westmeath is 2:15 in Croke Park. So it'll be pretty clear at some stage in the second half of the Kildare Westmeath game what way this is going. But actually, I think it'll be very clear from the night before.
You don't think Westmeath have any chance of upsetting Kildare, really, despite having a good season? No, they're just not at that level yet.
Well, they went very close last year to beating Westmeath. It was 2:14-18 in the corresponding semi-final. Daniel Flynn turned on a really great performance for Kildare. I sense Kildare are a different team this year. There's a different veneer. There's a harder edge. Now, you can say that's a manifestation of the of the new management, and maybe it is, and they've displaced Jack O'Connor, who is blazing a trail with Kerry now. But I think when there's a home contingent like that in charge, they are getting a bit more, and they've taken a different view of certain players within the county too. You know, Kildare won their three, sorry, they drew one against Kerry and beat Dublin and Monaghan at home in St. Conlon's Park, which is a fair record. Obviously, you know, they lost the last day to Mayo, and they just ran out of gas. I think probably not used to that sustained Division One campaign. Division One is a really tough place to exist and operate. And maybe, just maybe, on that last day that the legs gave out, that, you know, just the number of games and the sheer intensity and the pace that they had to play was just overwhelming them in the end. And obviously, look, Mayo are probably just that bit ahead of them too. And when they weren't at home, they didn't have that home crowd, because there is a real atmosphere in St. Conlon's Park, as Mayo know from 2018 when they get behind. You know, they can be formidable, very formidable down there. So, short answer, I think Kildare will beat Westmeath, but I really do think Tipperary could turn things over against Limerick. Probably will have taken a lot out of Limerick to go to extra time with Clare. The emotion of winning a penalty shootout, you know, I think Tipperary are, they're not hiding in the long grass. They've been provincial champions 2 years ago. They have a real chance, real shot at this.
Just to square that circle then, Colm, if that was to happen and if Mayo were to come out in the draw Monday morning against a Tyrone or an Armagh, or even a Louth, but let's say a Tyrone or Armagh, I suppose, for the sake of this conversation, would you be worried about Mayo, given the injuries, given their recent run of form, and just given what you've made of them lately? Or do you think there's a kick in them this soon after the Galway game, or with so many injury worries?
No, Mike, I think there's a kick in Mayo. I think, you know, I think Paddy Durkin is back training, isn't he? He's back, very much back in the mix. He's a real addition. I mean, he's such a dynamo for them. Having him back is a real help, and just his presence alone there. I'd be more concerned about Tyrone. I think it's taken, they just don't seem to me, looking at the Derry performance and even at times during the league, and, you know, we can pretty much write off a lot of the league. I know we get excited about it when it's at the time when it's in train, but more concerning was just the gap that Derry were able to put between themselves and Tyrone. They just didn't seem to be, and I know people will say, look, they weren't Ulster, they're just as close to the they're just as close, but it is a concern that a lot of their top players just haven't hit form. And I always think, without Matty Donnelly, and it's unlikely Matty Donnelly will see a lot of action this year for Tyrone, without him they're always missing something. I think he'd lose them together in a lot of positions. He can do anything for them. If it's a stint in full forward, if it's out around the middle, ball carrying, he was playing behind the midfield for a while. He's done it all for Tyrone. And while he wasn't an all-star and others came to the fore last time out, last year, for years, Matty Donnelly's been their best player. And I'd be concerned about the form of Cathal McShane as well, and Conor McKenna. They haven't really kicked on in the way that I thought they would. Obviously, Darren McCurry takes a bit of washing. So I think with last year's All-Ireland final in mind, Paddy Durkin back, we're actually setting this up for a Mayo Tyrone first round preliminary qualifier.
See what happens when you come on our podcast, you get afflicted by the same feeling, you know.
I think Mayo will hit the ground running in it. I just have a sense that they will, more than the other teams. I'd be fearful for Armagh now. I think Armagh will be pretty sore. They were probably billed as a little bit better than what they actually are in the league, and I just thought that they didn't bring the fight that they certainly shape all the time that you would think that they would bring. They didn't bring that fight to Donegal when it really mattered, and that's a concern, and that's something they have to sort out themselves. But they would be a very, very dangerous opponent for Mayo if that Tipperary result goes wrong. From a Mayo point of view, if that goes wrong on Saturday night and you're limited, you have a 20% chance of being pulled out of that draw. So that Armagh would be a difficulty.
Yeah, I wouldn't entirely disagree with you. I still think, though, yeah, on all things considered, I would imagine James Horne would love the extra fortnight, because Oisín Mullen is in quite a bit of trouble, I gather, with his hamstring. Jordan Flynn, I don't believe he'd be ready to play Saturday week. Rob Henley, we don't know. Rory Byrne hasn't done a whole lot wrong, but again, Robbie would bring something extra off the kick and tee and those long range frees, and then Killian would have an extra fortnight as well, I suppose, to get his body right. Would you think that's the case, Colm? Would James Horne ideally like the extra fortnight, or am I reading this maybe slightly wrong? Do you think he'd love to get back on the field tomorrow if he could?
Let's say if he could guarantee Clare or Loud, he'd love to get back out straight away. I think that would be pretty much it. Not being dismissive of them, but obviously they have a good record against Clare and they would beat Loud. Let's face it, they're going to be better. And that would be a perfect springboard to be in the mix against Derry, Monaghan, probably Meath, Cork, Tyrone, Armagh, whoever else it's going to be then. Look, if you could guarantee you had either of those, yes, it's the perfect springboard. Otherwise, in light of what you're saying about injuries, wasn't Flynn in about an 8-week injury? And obviously, look, you've Durkin back, but you've potentially losing Mullen. Wouldn't it be great to have the two of them, obviously, driving forward? Although you would like to see them mix it up a little bit more and maybe change up the kicking game or bring in a bit more of that as well. So, you're gaining Durkin, but perhaps losing Mullen. Yes, I would think 2 weeks more wouldn't do them any harm. There's enough challenge matches out there in the circuit. I know they're not the same, but if it means having some of their best players back, all systems go. I'm pretty sure they'd appreciate that extra 2 weeks.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms. You can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
Colin, what's the wider view that you pick up on? Maybe even just speaking to some of the other team management personnel, whatever, on how Mayo managed to lose that game and what it says about where this Mayo group are. Like, I mean, like, how are people thinking about Mayo right now in 2022 after that Galway game?
I suppose the general consensus is they don't have the forwards to win it. And without Tommy Conroy, who offered them something that probably no Mayo forward has given them, that just acceleration through a gap, as we saw in the extra time of the Dublin game last year. And even at times in the All-Ireland final too, he did create a bit of space. So he gives them something different. And while they're gaining Killian O'Connor, obviously, and he'll be better again, he's another player that will obviously benefit from time. While you're gaining him, the loss of Conroy, you just love to see them all playing together again as they did in 2020, albeit 2 years older. So general feeling is, and I know it's a well-worn one, that they just don't, that the scores come harder. And that is the general consensus, although of course they're going to be very, very dangerous, opponents. And I think that their awareness of the qualifier pathway, their past history in turning these situations around, I know they're not the same personnel, as I said earlier, but still, there's a lot of knowledge there about how to go about this. And obviously, there's still a hunger and still a great drive to get that end result, no matter what. And that counts for a lot. And it's probably counting against Tyrone at the moment.
Colm, I know no more than the rest of us, you've been out and about over the last few weeks. You've seen a lot of football. You've seen a lot of the contenders in the flesh. I was in Wexford a couple of weeks ago. I saw the Dubs. I was down in Cork at the weekend. I saw Kerry. And I'd just love to know, when you look at the pecking order now, the overall pecking order, how are you ranking the top three, the top five, and where do Mayo sit based on the evidence we've seen in the last 3-4 weeks?
I think Kerry are number one, even though they're not All-Ireland champions, but you have to look at what they've done defensively, Mike, in all their games this year, and even evident last Saturday night. For all Cork's front foot that they provided, for all the aggression they brought and did an awful lot of things right, even setting up in the way they did against David Clifford, Kerry still only conceded 11 points, and that's probably in tune with what they've done. Their average concession throughout the league was 13 points. And that's what a lot of their games are coming in around. So that's really the baseline for them. They've only conceded two goals. They've conceded two goals in 12 games. If you include the three McGrath Cup games and the league final and now the Cork game, the only two goals they conceded was a penalty to Monaghan. And I was at that game and it shouldn't have been a penalty. Conor McManus scored it, but I had a good enough view of it to say harsh call against them. And Darren McCurry got the only other goal, the only goal from play in 12 games. Now, you can dismiss the McGrath Cup and say that, but it's still the same management team putting a set of Kerry players out with the same philosophy, and that is don't concede. And that's their pillar this year, because they've been hit with bad goals so often, whether it's been the three against Tyrone last year or if it's the late Mark Keane goal, and it's just goals have always undone them. Bad goals, the concession of bad goals has just undone them. You go back to Owen Merchant early on, from the throw-in second half of the replay All-Ireland 2019. That breaks that game. That's another goal that's gone against us. So the philosophy here is shutout all the way. Now, at the other end, there was obviously a big concentration on David Clifford. And I probably said it after that, and it's an obvious one. It doesn't take any great knowledge or anything to say that after watching Pádraig Ó Hoire with no outrider in the league final, you would have to say, you go in against Clifford without that support for his direct marker and you'll pay the price. And Mayo obviously paid the price. Cork paid the price a little bit differently. It created gaps for others. And it was Stephen O'Brien and Dermot O'Connor who really poured through those gaps while keeping David Clifford relatively quiet. He was quiet by his standards. So I see Kerry's defensive game has improved. I know Paddy Talley will get a lot of credit for that, but there's good coaches there, and Mike Quirk and Dermot Murphy, very, very shrewd men. And of course, Jack O'Connor, who has always brought something in his two previous terms as Kerry manager. He has always brought something different, especially in his early years. The Jack Slam is still on, the league and championship double in his first year. And I think they're well positioned. I also think Dublin are very, very strong again. They lack a bench. For sure, they lack a bench. Desi Farrell might have brought in, he probably tried 11 new players in the league. I know there was a lot more in the O'Byrne Cup, but let's talk about the league. There's 11 players he gave game time to, debutants in the league. I'd say only two of them, Lee Gannon and Lorcan O'Dell, will make any real impact this year. I could be wrong. Maybe Kieran Archer comes back from an injury and does something. But for me, there's only two of them. That's not really enough given the level of change that they've had. So their bench, and what really stood to them was their bench so many times. And we saw it in All-Ireland finals with the likes of Cormac Costello coming on and winning the 2016 All-Ireland replay against Mayo. So the bench isn't as strong. Maybe the defence, there's a couple of chinks in the armoury there. Is Mick Fitzsimons the player he was? He's up to 33, 34. He'd have a concern. There's a big injury concern about Davy Byrne at the moment, whether he'll play much part in the season. So they're a little bit short there. But I would always say this, as long as Brian Fenton and Kieran Kilkenny are functioning, once there's a breath in them as regards football, Dublin will always be strong. And there's fair evidence to say that Conor Callaghan is back. He's well rested. He's had an injury. But he looked pretty sharp against Wexford, albeit Wexford. And he really makes them ticks and he provides that danger. Who's third?
Well, yeah, and this is important, Colin, because, like, you know, when you think about it, there's a huge opening for a Galway, a Monaghan, a Derry, Donegal to get to an All-Ireland final.
They're all tightly grouped there. I just think Kerry and Dublin will be just that little bit ahead. And I know Tyrone and Mayo contested the All-Ireland final last year and that ostensibly this year they should be 1-2. But that's just not along the form line. It's not. And I know Dublin have been relegated, but I'm only trying to project the way I think. I think Dublin will fly out of Leinster. We don't know who their All-Ireland quarterfinal but I do see them meeting Kerry in an All-Ireland semi-final. Who comes in the other side? Well, that largely depends on the qualifier draw. I give Monaghan a great chance of beating Derry, even though Derry have beaten Tyrone. I think there's something in Monaghan. There's another push to an Ulster final. Personally, I think that. I think some of their forwards are in really, Jack McCarron is in the form of his life. I mean, he's such a talented kicker of the ball. He's not the strongest. He's not the fittest. Sorry, not the fittest. He's not the fastest, but his speed of thought is something else, and his ability to kick from angles that you wouldn't even dream of. It's Stephen O'Neill-esque, if you remember some of his shots for Tyrone over the years. I think there's a group of them there. I can't really say. I think it's probably still, I'd put Mayo ahead of Tyrone just on form at the moment. You might say, well, they weren't good enough against Galway, but I do put Mayo with those players back, on the condition that those players back, and given that the chase is still very much on, I just put them slightly ahead of Tyrone. And obviously Galway and Donegal are tucking in behind that with the potential mark, with the potential label written across them still. I was at the Donegal game the other day. Wasn't overly impressed by them. I think they got lucky breaks for both goals. They were probably going to win it anyway, but Cavan really, really put it up to them. And obviously, there's lots of potential in Galway and in Sean Kelly. They have an outstanding leader. He's captain. He's a great driver out of defence. And know, Damien Comer and Shane Walsh are capable of great things, and both in reasonably good form. Walsh has come back a little bit too, and obviously his kicking off the ground against Mayo really counted. But I have to say, I think the core teams still, nobody has done enough behind those four teams to suggest that the order should change. Not for me, not even Galway beating Mayo, and even though they were six ahead at one stage, not even that. I think there'll be a different dynamic if they meet further in the championship, just as there was in 2019. But again, very much dependent on getting nearly all of those players back that we discussed earlier.
You know, you mentioned Donegal there, Colm, and I was just reading Kevin McStay's column in the Irish Times a little bit earlier on, and it was more or less completely dedicated to the subject of Michael Murphy and the fact that Kevin thinks if Donegal put Michael Murphy to the edge of the square, they could win in All-Ireland, and if they don't, they probably won't. And I was thinking about it from a Mayo perspective, and I can't think of anything more frightening than the prospect of coming up against Donegal with Murphy at full forward in an All-Ireland semi-final or quarter-final or whatever it might be. I just think with Mayo's injury issues and the lack of a dominant fullback, we could end up with Aidan O'Shea back there again or something if balls started raining in on top of us. But what I wanted to kind of ask you about, though, you mentioned there the league final in passing, and, you know, there's been so much talk down here about the league final in the wake of the Galway defeat, because all of a sudden I think the penny dropped that maybe there was more damage done than we realised at the time. So when you take the league final and you take the Galway defeat or performance, when Mayo re-emerge again, Colm, like what do we have to see different? Like, what issues just have to be addressed if Mayo are going to make this run through the back door and get back to Croke Park and have a real shot at it again? Like, what are you expecting to have changed in terms of how the team sets up and how guys like maybe Lee Keegan, Oisin Mullen, guys like that are positioned even? Because I'm working here on the theory that if nothing changes, well, then there's almost a kind of an inevitability really to how this thing is going to play out over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. I mean, to my knowledge, is there any team currently, there probably are a few, but any of the top teams, are any of them really playing without a sweeper or without even a fault sweeper, if you like, that there isn't somebody? Like, they all are, essentially. I can't think of any team on the front line that is not dropping somebody back in some shape or form that's offering that protection. And obviously, if Michael Murphy plays at full forward and you leave him one-to-one with anybody, and actually Aidan O'Shea would be a good call, that'd be a great battle, and it's one that would make life very difficult, for sure.
I'd have to give kudos now to Stephen Rochford for that idea, to be fair.
Oh yeah, 2017, yeah, of course. But it would be, now that you've seen it work against Kieran Donaghy, obviously I'd say Michael Murphy's mobility and even would be greater than Kieran's at that stage of his career. But if you leave him one-to-one, of course you're going to get punished. And if you leave any of the great forwards one-to-one, they're going to punish you. So I think the league final, it should have been an eye-opener for Mayo to do something a little bit differently. Now, as it happened, no forward for Galway really hurt Mayo in a way that Clifford did or that Murphy probably could. When you think back about it, it was just a slight lapse by Aidan O'Shea, wasn't it, when Johnny Heaney nipped in. He probably just wasn't expecting them to come. And he had a good first half in that defensive role as well. Probably faded after that a little bit, but did have a good first half. But we just caught a little bit there. And I suppose the difference was in that second half were those three long-range frees from and 45s from Shane Walsh. And they have a real galvanising effect for any team when you see those go over. So it's a real asset. But definitely, I could not see how Mayo would continue on for the rest of this campaign without paying much, much closer attention to protecting their full back line. And they have a lot of players that could easily turn to that role and become explosive ball carriers out of defence. Paddy Durkin could be very well suited for, although you could maybe there's an argument for him to be played further upfield as well. But there's also Oisin Mullen. There's even Owen McLaughlin. They all are fast breakers. If they're good readers of the game, then it works. But I definitely think you need somebody. I mean, Kerry have nearly built a game plan now around Tadhg Morley doing what he's doing. Galway obviously played with the two sweepers. Dublin will have Johnny Cooper, although more than likely Johnny Cooper will be a sweeper. Or certainly, if not an out-and-out sweeper, he'll be the one dropping back and others will be filling his number six role there. So they'll all pay a lot of attention to it. And it really is, no matter what has gone on before, it's something Mayo really have to pay a lot of attention to.
Where is the James Horan project for you right now?
It's probably reaching its, it should be reaching its peak, because he's brought a lot of players through and they're maturing. I think this year, I'm not sure, he's 4 years. So that's the Olympic cycle, as they call it. That's where it was the last time. It was as far as Jim McGuinness went with Donegal, if you want a comparable term as well. It really is. It should be coming to peak. Unfortunately, injuries have derailed it to some degree. If everybody was right and everybody was full of their health, I think they'd be a very, very formidable team still.
Big thanks to Nigel Reap, Office Supplies, Print and Sign, for supporting what we're doing here in the podcast. A friend of the podcast, as you know, comes on to talk football with us. But if you need any printing done, posters, signs, lotto booklets for your club, you name it, then give a shout to Nigel in Knockmore at 086 858 6572. You know, it's just not the case. He's got to try and make it work. And you wonder, does he have the flexibility to just make something happen with what he has? Because you said yourself, Colm, there's the makings of a full forward line on paper in Mayo that could be as good as most teams, but there isn't the makings of a full forward line for June 4th or even May 21st. So does something different have to come on along from Mayo?
Yeah, as I said, I think defensively is where it starts. It really is, and not so much the Galway game, but that, you know, you have to look at the league final. And I know maybe the focus wasn't as strong there as it should have been. I suppose it's a national final. Maybe it wasn't, and that there was a little concession on the injuries and the absentees. But I do think a defensive plan. One, it's probably the identity of the player you're going to be dropping back. Who is it? Who's clever enough to play it? Donegal used to play Mark McHugh in that position, and he's a real clever footballer. He's not the biggest. He's not probably not the fastest either, but he's a very, very shrewd footballer, for good football brain, and he was able to operate it, and he operated it very well. And a lot of teams have since taken their cue from what he did. And while certainly teams attack a lot more, and even Derry, now managed by Rory Gallagher, who was coach to that Donegal team, they are defending deep and they are dropping players back, but they're attacking with great pace. And that's something that Mayo probably major on more than any team, with those game breakers. But they do have to maybe commit less numbers to attack. I don't know, maybe, you know, take a chance on some more ball inside. You see how it worked for Donegal, albeit I thought there were two speculative efforts that were for point attempts. But chaos can reign too. And maybe they just need a bit more than that, more of that.
Yeah, chaos certainly has come to Mayo's rescue a few times in the big games, all right, over the years. But one other thing, Colin, wanted to just ask you about before we move on to chat about the ladies, the Connacht ladies final on Sunday. Mayo's impact off the bench, you know, in obviously the league final was long gone by the time the subs started coming in, so you couldn't read a whole lot into it. But there wasn't a big impact off the bench against Galway either. And I know there are guys out injured, which has really hurt the squad and left the squad very stretched. But today in the Mayo News, I just had a look at five forwards that might now come into the frame for the qualifiers that we haven't seen. Four of them we haven't seen at all during the league. And the other, Fionn McDonagh, we saw very briefly before he tore his hamstring up in Tyrone. I picked out Fionn Duffy from Cross Malina, Conor McStay from Ballina, Stephen Ites, Mark Moran from Westport, and Pierce Rutledge from Knockmore as well. And I suppose that just got me thinking, Colm, about that aspect of it as well. What have you made of Mayo's kind of strength in depth. Like, again, I know the injuries have forced James Horan to go down again deeper into his squad, but with the games potentially coming thick and fast and the hill getting steep very quickly, it's going to put a major focus, isn't it, on who can come in, hit the ground running, impact a game, and you know, be that sort of X factor player. Those guys I mentioned, I know you'll have seen all of them playing a bit of club football or a bit of county football over the last few years. Are there any of those five that you'd be excited about that you think could have the potential maybe to make an impact on the summer?
Well, I always remember Mark Moran's first bow in Tuam, wasn't it? Tuam in that first game back after COVID, and he looked a really, really impressive and clever player until he ran into Tyrone the following week, and then he faded away, and there hasn't been much about him since. And I just wonder, would he be robust enough to really make an impact? That's one lovely footballer, obviously. Pierce Rutledge is a bit of cut about him. I've obviously seen him play for Knockmore in county finals and in Connacht finals. There's a bit of cut about him, but again, it's a huge step up there. It's a really, really big step up that I think a lot of teams, even if you look across to Cara Finn, there's not a huge amount of them making a big impact. You know, you would have expected more over the years. Obviously, Liam Silk has been a fixture there, but some of their better players during that three in a row of All-Ireland finals didn't really cut it. So it's a hard gap to make up. I would think that Mayo are looking to players to come back off the treatment table, for them to have any better extended, for them to have any kind of impact. I think you're looking at the injured players back. And the other interest was Darren Cohen. Where has Darren Cohen gone in the greater scheme of things? I mean, I always felt there's an impact in him somewhere. It didn't happen for him in the All-Ireland final, obviously. But I felt he's one of the better kickers of a ball. Like, he can snap a shot away very, very quickly. He can get his shots away quickly, which against mass defences is always a help. So he's one I would have thought that should have been circulation. Now, obviously, James Carr has done very well in the two games, league final and against Galway. Powerful ball carrier, and kicking points on the run is something that he has mastered pretty well as well. So he's another probably addition. I know, obviously, in 2019 in the league final and after that, the goals against Galway, he was impressive. But he dipped away a little bit after that, but he seems to be back. So he's one that you could say, and obviously he's been starting. So he extends that depth quite a bit. But Darren Cohen is one I would have been curious about as to why he hasn't featured a bit more.
All right, you got in a word plus one sentence before we move this on. Who's going to win the Connacht final?
I think Galway will win it on the basis that it'd be very difficult to see them lose three times in 2 months to Roscommon. I just don't see it. And I think Shane Walsh is probably back after an injury, and he's gathering a bit of form. So I think Galway just about.
That's enough for us.
Decent Roscommon. I mean, that Roscommon forward line, very, very strong forward line. And Enda Smith, it's taken him a good while to get to where he is now, but he's one of the stronger centre forward midfielders around. He's put a lot of power into his game, and he's leading. So that's a big thing for them.
That wasn't easy now, because you didn't expect me to just throw that in there, but I was just curious when we talked about everything else. To finish our chat with Colm, big news in the paper today, Mike. You obviously were all over this story with the lads. Oisín McGovern was chatting as well to the Mayo management, and we're going to hear from Michael Moyles and Saoirse Lally as well. But just the breaking news on the Mayo's panel, and a lot of people have really been just taken aback by this. Mayo just are going to be devoid of some serious talent this season in the All-Ireland.
Yeah, there's no doubt. This was headline news when it broke over the weekend and into yesterday. I suppose, first of all, reading Oisín's piece yesterday, I couldn't believe when I saw it written down in black and white that Mayo haven't won the All-Ireland since 2003. Like, we're coming up on 20 years since Mayo last won the All-Ireland ladies title, which is just a phenomenal stat. But yeah, Michael Moyles could be without as many as seven of last year's championship squad. The three household names, the three big names, are the Kelly sisters, Niamh and Grace and Sarah Rowe. They are not in a position to commit is the way it's been phrased, because of the fact that the Australian rules season has come forward now and is going to start in August. Their contracts will kick in during the summer. Michael Moyles needed a commitment into July. The girls weren't in a position to give that commitment, so therefore they haven't been included in the Mayo panel. Then on top of that, you have Dana Finn, who's involved with the Irish basketball team. She'd be obviously a starter on the Mayo team, all things considered. She is not in a position to commit either because of basketball. And then you've also got Fiona Doherty, who's contracted to Sligo Rovers for the foreseeable future as well. So Fiona, I gather, is based in Donegal. She's obviously playing soccer at a very high level. And then just to compound the problems, Clodagh and Ciara McManaman are both coming back from injury. They would be very experienced campaigners and would have been seen as key players in the Mayo squad over the last few seasons as well. So you look, all told, Michael Moyles has got he's got a lot of big pairs of boots to fill. Now he's obviously very confident that he's found good young players. He's drafted in a raft of county minors actually into the squad. And I must also give credit where it's due. Michael Moyles releasing the Mayo Ladies Championship squad into the public domain on Sunday evening, which just makes everybody's life so much easier. It's there. It's everybody knows who's in the panel. There's no gray areas about who might be involved or, you know. I'd have to say that was a welcome development as well.
Okay, Usher McGovern caught some voices. Here's a snippet or two from it. You can read the interviews in the Mayo News, but here's Michael Moyles, followed by vice-captain of the Mayo Ladies this year, Saoirse Lally.
So we're here now with Mayo Ladies manager Michael Moyles. Michael, first of all, I suppose before we look ahead to the championship campaign, can you just reflect on the league campaign that you just had? You scored 16 goals, got to a semi-final where you were bet by the All-Ireland champions, used 27 players. I suppose overall, would you say that you met the targets that you set going into the league?
Yeah, well, our target was really to get out of the group and qualify for a National League semi-final, which we done, and we topped the group, which was kind of an added bonus. Playing the All-Ireland champions in the semi-final was going to be a good barometer where we were, but even coming out of the game, we were left disappointed. We felt that we didn't perform, and we learned a lot about ourselves and, I suppose, about playing opposition teams, which is good. Like, we had a lot of young players coming through, and we got a lot of experience from the league, which was the main aim.
Has what Meath did last year been a source of inspiration for you?
Yeah, I suppose it has. It just goes to show that it's possible. Like, obviously, there's a very talented bunch in Meath as well. It didn't just happen by accident. Like, there's a lot of good players coming through at the same time there, and they had won some underage competitions. So, yeah, absolutely. It just goes to show that it's very open. There is five or six teams that would be very hopeful of winning a Brendan Martin Cup each year.
Yeah, and Michael, we understand that Rachel Kearns isn't currently involved at the minute, but Grace Kelly, Niamh Kelly, Aileen Gilroy and Sarah Rowe won't have any involvement in the year ahead, as well as Dana Finn. So five fairly big names there. So can you begin to, I suppose, quantify what sort of a loss they'll be to the group in footballing terms?
Yeah, well, Aileen wasn't involved last year. She is committed to the AFL from the last 12 or 18 months. I know she's travelling, and, you know, that's fine. For Sarah, Niamh and Grace, I suppose the big change there came in the change of the season with the ladies AFL. And their season changed from about, I think it was March, that word came out that their season was changing. So they're contracted from June. It's really dependent on the club. Look, is it a loss? Yes, it's a loss. It happens all the time. If you look at the men's team where there's injuries, Mayo are still able to field, Mayo are still able to be competitive, and that's where we want to be. Well, we're very lucky in the fact that we have very good underage structures in Mayo, we have very good club systems in Mayo, and like when we get players like Jenna Mortimer and Kieran Ireland and Sorka McCarney, you know, Sinead Walsh, minor girls from this year coming through and showing what they can do on the training field, that's what just has to happen. We just have to reset ourselves and regenerate ourselves. And just look at what we don't have, we have to look at what we do have.
Yeah, and the Meath manager recently called women's AFL dreadful stuff and said that there was no skill in the game. And I think your predecessor, Peter Leahy, was similarly critical of the game. But what's your own opinion on women's AFL?
I don't really have an opinion. I don't watch it. I concentrate on ladies GAA because that's my role here in Mayo. I go and bring my 2 6-year-old or 5-year-old twins to under 16, under 14 and minor games for Mayo and clubs, and that's what I like to watch. And that's, I don't really have an opinion on the AFW or AFWL. It's not really something that I've really got into, to be honest with you. I just concentrate on what we have here.
Yeah, and coming back to you then, with players like, you know, Sinead Welsh, that has, you know, racked up a huge score during the yearly campaign, and Seán Howley playing so well, are you confident that the players you have will fill the void left by the players that won't be involved?
Of course. And look, we've a brilliant coaching team here and management team with us that are helping girls develop all the time. And like, if you put the likes of Sinead Walsh and Sorka McCarney and Jenna Mortimer and Kieran Ireland, and you put them around the likes of, you know, Sinead Cafferty, Lisa Cafferty, Fiona McHale, like, that experience around them is going to develop them as players. And look, as I said, we have to keep soldiering on, and we have to keep redeveloping ourselves all the time. And we're very, very happy with the way training is going and the way the girls are developing.
And I suppose we've heard in the last year a lot about things like horn ball, structure beats chaos. If Moyle's ball, if you like, is a thing, what does it look like? What's your style of play? Do you have one in particular?
I just kind of look at the Mayo style of play. It's kind of fast transitional ball, and like, you can put as much structure as you can, but a game is chaotic, like, and there's always kind of variables that will happen in football. So we just try to coach the girls as much as possible to play the game that's in front of them. And you can see the way the ladies' game is going now is very structured as well. Football is about enjoying yourself. Football is about playing it in front of you. I think we had a good way of playing during the league, and we'd hope to keep that for the championship.
Yeah, and I understand, Michael, you've added a former teammate of yours, Padder Gardner, to the coaching ticket. We all know a lot about Padder and what he did on the field for Mayo and Crossmolina, but what's he bringing to your setup?
Yeah, well, himself and Jerry Kafke are coaching at the moment, and the two of them are very deep thinkers of the game, very enthusiastic coaches, and like, the girls feed off that. It's kind of structured training sessions. Look, what we're trying to do is to improve ourselves all the time, not just on the field, but in our management team, and bring the standards higher all the time for Mayo ladies football. And that's what we said we would do at the very, very start, that we'd expect standards off the girls, but we'd also expect standards off ourselves. And I think having the likes of, you know, Padraig Gardner and Jerry Kafke and, you know, Micheál Slingerman as our goalkeeping coach raises standards all the time, and we're asking the girls to commit an awful lot of time to Mayo football. So I think this is the least they deserve, is to have people like Padder, Jer, Micheál, Greg Regan, people like this involved in the backroom team.
So I'm joined here now by Mayo ladies vice-captain Saoirse Lally. So how have you found it playing under Michael Moyles? This is his second season in charge. You're currently vice-captain. What has it been like? Can you give us an idea?
Yeah, he's brilliant. He brings new ideas at the start of every training and every match. I haven't had a coach like him before. You can talk to him about anything. He's very approachable. Even any issues, or if you think something isn't working on the pitch, that if you have any other ideas, he's very approachable, and he'll help you with anything, which is great.
Yeah, and he has also assembled quite an impressive backroom team together. How does that kind of all work with you?
Yeah, it's brilliant. We have different people for different jobs. Like, we have a strength and conditioning coach, and then a nutritionist, Evan Regan, which focuses just on our pre-match meals. And then we have a defending coach, Jerry Kafke, who used to play for Mayo. So he's very experienced and a very good coach. And then we have a few forward coaches and just everyone with different expertise, with different, being able to give different advice.
Yeah, and you're currently studying physiotherapy up in UCD, Saoirse. So can you tell me what that's like, trying to balance your studies, trying to balance work, trying to balance football, trying to keep everything on the go, given the pressures that young people are under nowadays?
It is tough. Travelling back to Mayo twice a week does take it out of you. Around exam season as well, you don't have to go to every training if you have an exam in the morning, and you'd be back late to Dublin. But yeah, no, it does work. We'd all travel down together. There's a couple of girls in UCD, a couple in Trinity, and a couple in DCU. There'd just be a few carriers coming down.
Yeah, and obviously it took a while to get going last year with the lockdown, but how do you reflect on last year, where you got to an All-Ireland semi-final, you were nominated for an All-Star, got to play in Croke Park? How do you reflect on 2021?
Oh yeah, it was brilliant. Considering we didn't get to do we didn't have any time for a pre-season with COVID. It was April by the time we got training, so it was in a very short space of time, and we did well considering. But this year we're hoping to push on further because we got a proper pre-season, and hopefully make it even further this year.
Great stuff. Great to get that audio and access as well. Colm, you know, just circling back, and it was mentioned in the interview, but your thoughts on the implications of this. I mean, a county like Mayo losing three household names like that to professional sport.
Yeah, and it looks like they won't be the only county either. Obviously, three on top of all those other players, I suppose, is considerable, huge loss. There's no doubt about it, the quality of player there. But there's a differentiation between some clubs. Quite clearly, there's a differentiation between clubs on certain players. Looks like Cork's Eric O'Shea, a very talented player, she's not part of the Cork squad. She's gone out to North Melbourne, which is also the club that Vicky Wall, the current Ladies Footballer of the Year, is going to. But Vicky Wall is not due out until August, whereas Eric O'Shea is obviously, from what I gather, she's required earlier. So she has had to sit out Cork's campaign, get down there earlier. But there's been obviously some dispensation for Vicky Wall to continue on in the expectation that Meath will be back at least close to an All-Ireland final this year. So she's got the break, or should we say maybe it's a better contract. I don't know the detail of it, but she's not going out to North Melbourne, it seems, until August. But I think there'll be a lot more. I think we'll have a situation where there could actually be probably double the number of ladies Gaelic footballers out there than contracted Irish players on AFL teams. That's dwindling, where the ladies' numbers are growing. And that's probably reflective of the fact that the standards of ladies Gaelic football by comparison, the gap between ladies football and a developing women's AFL is probably a lot less to make up than it is for the Irish recruits to the AFL itself. There's obviously a much bigger gap there in terms of adjusting. Not a physical gap, not a fitness gap. No longer that. That's for sure. Those players, a lot of those young Irish players going out are ready to go. It's the adaption to the ball, and obviously the tactics and all of that. That is a lot harder for them to decode, where it seems to be the gap isn't as great for the ladies, so they're much more adaptable and can make quite an impact. And they have made quite an impact over the last 2 years. And I can see the numbers growing, and I can see more players like that impacted. It's a lifestyle choice for them as much as anything else. We can say it's a semi-profession, whatever it is, but there's a lifestyle choice too, that you're going down there and, you know, the season has obviously changed. It's running from August to about December. It's hard to find fault in it, really, for some of them. There's that opportunity at a stage in their lives when some of them might be travelling anyway. So it's difficult, really, for them to argue. It's unfortunate that the seasons have changed, that the WAFL has moved to that slot, because it was perfect. It was over by March, April, and they could just slot back into their panels here, and they'd be fit and ready to go pretty quickly. So, but that's not possible for a lot of them now. So I can see more of it. I can see the numbers growing. I don't know, was it 14 last year? We're in WAFL. It could be 20 this year. They could actually be up to that, and that'll be double the men.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms. You can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
Yeah, it's remarkable to think, like, there's five Mayo, potential Mayo ladies footballers caught up in this, Rob, because you also have Aileen Gilroy, who hasn't been in with Mayo the last couple of seasons. But, you know, again, to all intents and purposes, would be a serious addition if she was in a position to commit or was brought in. And then it's worth pointing out as well, Rachel Kearns actually has committed to play with Mayo. Rachel was with Geelong last season, but obviously, as Colm said, maybe different clubs have different requirements in place. But I'm not 100% sure of the detail there, but Rachel Kearns is in the Mayo squad. And of course, this is all very relevant from the point of view Mayo are out now on Sunday, this coming Sunday. The Connacht final is on Sunday at 4 o'clock in Tuam Stadium. So this is a quick turnaround for Michael Moyles and his, you know, new look squad. And it's worth pointing out, if people want to know just how much the winds of change are blowing through Mayo ladies football. One Carnacun player in the Mayo squad now, Fiona McHale, is still soldiering on, you know, a terrific footballer, former All-Star. You know, there's still a really good caliber of player there from Danielle Caldwell, Catherine Sullivan, Shauna Howley. You've got the teenage sensation herself, Sinead Welsh from McHale Rovers. The Needhams are in there, and Saoirse Lally, who you will have heard from a few minutes ago. So there's still a really good quality of player. It's just when you lose all those others, it's going to be a big ask, I think, for Mayo to end that, what is it, 19-year wait and go all the way to an All-Ireland. It would be some achievement if they managed it now with all those players missing.
Padder Gardner jumps in with Michael Moyles, Finno, and we broke that as well. But the Cross Malina, whatever it is in the water down there, those guys know how to coach football.
Yeah, this was a serious coup by Michael Moyles, and I'd be really curious to see what Cullum thinks, because Padder Gardner would have come to coaching prominence last season when he worked with Damian Mulligan, and they brought Bell Mullet to a county senior final. Heard nothing but good things about Padder on the training ground. Then obviously he was involved with Maurice Sheridan and the Mayo under-20s up till a few weeks ago. And then we just heard on the grapevine last week that he had gone in with the Mayo ladies. And when you consider now Michael Moyles, Cross Malina man, Padder, obviously they won an All-Ireland club medal together back in 2001. They've also got Jerk Hafferty and Austin O'Malley involved in that Mayo lady setup as well. And that they're just the four names that spring to mind. You know, Michael Moyles has assembled a serious backroom team. But Cullum, you know, when you consider all the Cross Malina footballers, Joe Kane and Stephen Rochford, obviously, as well, working with inter-county teams, so many others, James Nallan did his stint with Mayo. I think most of that 0-1 team are training teams within the club or where they've moved on. Jerry O'Malley in with John Mahan the last few years up in Offaly. It's an absolutely phenomenal conversion rate, isn't it, into coaching and management. And of course, how could I forget Kieran McDonald, obviously, in with Mayo as well.
Mayo, that's incredible, actually. They're almost have an involvement in certainly in all the flagship teams in Mayo. Is there anyone with the minors? That's the only one. They've ladies, senior ladies, senior men's under 20. And obviously an involvement in Sligo and Donegal and Offaly. So you could have prompted a feature in me, Mike, for for a couple of weeks' time on that, because I'm just offhand. I'm trying to think: is there a comparable club around? Probably Errigal Kieran to some degree, because Mickey Hart is obviously stems from there. Peter Canavan, who would have extensive coaching experience, even though he's more analysis now. And Malachy O'Rourke has been aligned to them. He actually teaches in Ballygawley. He's been teaching, so he's from there. And there are more as well. There's probably a club or two in Tyrone that are remotely comparable, but that's a heavy and impressive concentration of coaching talent there, no doubt about it. And somewhere in the mix, perhaps a future Mayo management team among some of them.
Finno, does anyone in Cross Malina ever just turn up to play football and go home? Like, I mean, this is just like, there was no one out there just enjoying their football.
I was lucky enough back in 2001 to have a front row seat when Cross Malina went and won that All-Ireland. And I was working at the coalface in Mayo when they were winning county titles and kind of club titles that time. And I suppose I wouldn't have predicted, obviously, they were all going to go on to coach and manage at such high levels, but there was something very special about that group. And they just have an incredible interest and appetite for football and learning and testing themselves. And I can't believe, Cullen mentioned it there, I can't believe they haven't anyone in with the minors, actually. I can't believe Johnny Leonard or Enda Lavelle or Gabriel Welsh or somebody hasn't jumped on that. Watch this space. But could you imagine... Cullum just threw it out there, I know, as probably just a throwaway line, but there'll be Mayo people who won't sleep tonight with the prospect of an all-cross Malina Mayo management team at some stage involving, you know, all those names we mentioned. But look, Pather Gardner's addition to the Mayo Ladies setup, as I said, Michael Moyles explained that he and Ger Caffrey will be working together. I mean, how lucky are these young Mayo Ladies footballers to be learning from the likes of Jerkaff and Pather Gardner. And it's why I would give them every chance of you know, pulling off a few big results this summer. I think you can't underestimate the youth and the speed and the sheer exuberance Mayo are going to bring to this thing. But it's a big ask against Galway on Sunday. Having said that, Galway, I think, have 12 of the Kilkerran Clonburren team that beat all before them in the club championship last season, and they're battle hardened and it's in Tuam, but certainly I would imagine Mayo will be very well prepared if nothing else.
Colm, I'll let you go on this. Sean Rice is writing today that it just doesn't feel like the championship. I mean, there's a Connacht final coming up, and he's just wondering, you know, where is this All Ireland final going to land on the calendar? How do you think it's being received at the moment, the feel overall about where we are in this experimental new calendar?
I think it's a little bit hasty. I think when you see an All Ireland under 20 final being pitched into a Saturday evening around the same time as around the same time as some of the big hurling matches that they're going up against in Leinster, it just all feels a little bit rushed, that all these games, none of them, and I've probably said this before, none of them are really getting to breathe. Like, we only had four games last weekend. There's one in Ulster, two in Leinster. There's two big Munster hurling games, three Leinster hurling games, and then that Munster semi-final. So it's a little bit imbalanced in from week to week now. You will see a lot more of that because it's so rushed. There will be down weekends where there won't be a whole lot on. In fact, I think the following weekend, if I'm not mistaken, I'd have to look, but just there's two Munster hurling semi-finals and then on the Sunday. And neither of them might not be a whole lot relevant, but there's very little football, if anything, because all the provincial finals are the following weekend, unless there's our favourite first round. That's the
Ely
following.
Park. Yeah. Ely Park.
Ely Park. So, look, I think when this is all reviewed, that the season will stretch on by another 2 weeks, but I'd say only 2 weeks, because if you were to ask, the reason is, obviously, it's a split season and you're clearly defining and you're creating time for club players. And essentially, while everybody and a lot of us see the GAA as a Gaelic Games as a spectator sport, predominantly it's a participation sport. And that's at the core of the GAA. And you can never forget that it's participation really first and foremost. And for a long time, the balance was very much in favour of the intercounty scene. And now it's probably gone too much to the side of the club scene. So I would think the All-Ireland final will finally rest at around the second weekend in August. But that's about it. Because if you look at Cork, if you see an outsize, they're the county you always have to hold up and say, well, they could potentially reach an All-Ireland hurling and football final, and that would suspend their club championships effectively until the middle of August, shall we say. And they still need a minimum of 12 weeks, but probably 14 weeks to complete their programmes before the provincial championship starts. So that's tight, and that's why this is happening. And I suppose for many, many years, there was that conflict, that interface between club and county, club month and everything else, and the wrangling over players. Right now, that's all gone. There's a lot of managers happy, obviously. They've won that war. But also there's a lot of administrators happy too, that they don't have to step into the middle of it. And I would think players, although I can't imagine, they're all enjoying just the breakneck pace of it all, especially the injured players. They'd like more time. We discussed it earlier here about needing two more weeks for some players. You get an injury now, hamstring injury, this week or next week, and you're looking at 4 to 6 weeks. and for some your season's over. So that's how fast it is, and that's the difficulty here. So I would think this will extend by 2 more weeks. Maybe there'll be an extra week taken over the league just to allow, you know, a bit of breathing space there. But certainly a week in the middle of the championship where it'll just be elongated. But I don't see any more. And that's finally the final resting place after being bumped around so much over the last few years, COVID and everything else. You'll see a early to mid-August All-Ireland football final eventually. It won't always stay in July. That'd be my feeling on it.
Brilliant stuff. Colin, we always appreciate your time. You were chasing stories up until you joined us this evening. So you're a busy man. I'm sure I don't know how you unwind. Did days go into the pub for until 3 a.m.?
I'm going to talk to you, Rob, and you, Mike. That's it. That's it.
I remember getting my work. I got my work experience as an 18-year-old in the Irish Daily Star in like 1998. And those lads, en masse, I don't want to cast dispersions, but they were to the pub most nights of the busy ones. But those days are gone.
No doubt, Brady's and Terenure, was it?
That was it. The very one.
Brady's and Terenure. The Star has since moved into the Independent building, actually, in Talbot Street. But it's no longer part of the Independent group. It's with the Mirror group. And I don't know where it'll end up. I'm not sure, obviously. But they were in the same building as us. They moved in, and Brady's obviously was vacated at that stage. But yeah. A media pub in its day, very much so.
Oh man, the stories that went on there and the sudden realizations of the mistakes, I'm sure, as well. But enough of that. Colm, we'll talk to you soon. We'll let you go off now and relax for the evening. Myself and Mike will finish off the clubhouse section for our Patreon listeners. But sure, look, we'll all know how things stand on Monday. And if you don't know what's happening in the qualifiers after listening to Colm Keyes, don't try and understand any of it from here on forth. Just forget about it.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks a million.
Cheers, Colm. Thanks a million.
Good luck.